Hi, thanks for joining us today. This is Bonnie Wallace, author of The Hollywood Parents Guide, and today my guest on this podcast is John Diacchino. John is a veteran actor and a master acting coach. He teaches weekly classes as well as private audition coaching and videotaping sessions in his studio in Burbank, California. John also holds local seminars, workshops, and summer camps in Burbank, and he travels the country teaching his proven acting and audition techniques and sharing his passion for acting with young students and their parents. John, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Bonnie, and welcome to everybody listening. It's a pleasure for me to be here.
So, you've starred in 6 television series, as well as recurring and guest starring on a lot of different television shows. Mm-hmm. Do you think that your breadth and depth of experience as an actor gives you an edge as an acting coach?
It's a good question. You know, I think yes, obviously, because you understand what it takes to get those jobs. And some of those jobs, as you well know, can be a process of 5 and 6 auditions before you have that job when you're testing. And in some cases, it happens so relatively easily. It's really interesting. It's almost as if when it's meant to be. But I think as a teacher, possibly it's the thousands of failures that that inform how I teach and maybe make me better suited for this than the average person. It's from those failures that I can... And I'm always thinking, how can I save this young actor the agony that I went through or the learning curve that I went through? And I was lacking mentorship. I had some really wonderful people in my life, but it would have been terrific. Some of them passed away of cancer early on after meeting them. Fantastic people. But I think I could have benefited by the mentorship along the journey.
Mentorship is huge. I know it's been incredibly central to my growth as an artist and as a person in general. So that's something that you offer basically as a coach as well, as mentorship. Would you say that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's part and parcel. So in a way, it's what every gymnastics and little league coach is doing with their kids. If you're really meant to be a coach and if you really are invested in how a child's life or a teen's life further develops, you know, it's an honor to play that role in their lives. So, yeah.
I love that. Can you describe your particular approach to acting? You know, there's a lot of different ways that people can teach acting, and I'm always curious about the differences between different teachers and techniques. How do you approach that?
Well, I think it's changed, number one. And there's different approaches that I'll take for various genres. So obviously the Disney Nick sitcom is a particular brightly colored genre. And then, you know, if you move on to major network sitcoms, it's going to be a much more subtle delivery, but yet it's still broad. If you move over to cable, then you're going to be using sharper brushes, different colors. And then once you move into 1-hour drama, well, is it Law and Order, dun, dun, and just give us the facts, or is it going to be a highly stylized CSI Miami, you know, where you have to tilt your head to the side and then perform? It just depends on what the show is. And then, so you have to be well-versed in all of those genres. I've had the fortune of doing most of those genres, so I think I understand it. I think my own personal approach has changed in the sense that when I was a young actor, I would want to predetermine what was going to happen into the room. And I realized, well, that's not a very good idea because the room, your audition room, is going to add a particular energy itself. And so improvisation really plays a big role in that. But also sensing the room, feeling the room, let that inform your choices. And yes, this is an emergency. This information... we're doing this in Los Angeles. If we were doing this in New York, it would be like one elongated siren in the background.
I think we may just keep this and not edit it out because this is real life in Los Angeles.
Exactly. And this information is an emergency. So, no, I guess what I'm trying to say is now I want to prepare very, very well. I want to know who my character is, and I want to know how they will be in most circumstances. But I don't want to know the next moment. So it's that delicate balance of the actor knows the script, but I don't want my character to know the next moment.
Ooh.
I want it to unfold organically, and I want to be as surprised as anyone. Because typically the reason why I go to the movie theaters or I want to watch a particular show is because I want to watch my favorite characters discover.
Yes, yes.
And then I want them to discover again. And now look, they're discovering again. And I want to go on that journey. And when it's really crafted well, I'm on the journey. I'm not watching the mechanics of how this was put together. So I think, as an instructor, I know that there's a math to situation comedy, and that's what I teach often on the road and in Los Angeles, and that's why agents and managers will send me their clients specifically for that. There is a math, and it's not rocket science. You don't have to be a genius. You just simply have to understand it and what they're asking for. But when it gets to the real complex, subtle type of styles, then you don't want to know. You don't want to predetermine, because then it's fabricated and it doesn't feel organic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. And how I will work with each child may depend upon what they're bringing in the room. And periodically, you know, somebody walks in the room and I realize, oh, wait a minute, I can't coach them the way I coach most of the kids, because this kid's bringing in something organic, different, idiosyncratic to their own personality, and I have to first honor that and see what else they can give to this piece. And then it offers the casting agent, you know, a different choice, something that maybe paints outside the lines and is very unusual to what the other kids maybe or teens may be delivering. I say kids and teens. I love teaching adults. And I do a lot of that on the road. Our business in Los Angeles seems to be primarily more kids and teens. It is a good fit for me personally and a good fit for us as a staff, because, quite frankly, you know, once you get to a certain age, oftentimes our young adults will walk in and they don't think their bags are fully packed. You want to tell them you need to kind of empty your luggage before you walk in here, because if we're going to do something that's new and fresh, you're so predetermined, and then you have your blockages. So with kids, there tends to be less blockages.
I like that. Well, kids naturally have, you know, that sort of beginner's mind, if you will. And I imagine that anybody who's gone through a BFA program or whatever has a certain number of things on their resume. They figure they pretty much, you know what they need to know, which makes them less open to what you might have to
that
contribute.
Point, when I was at Florida State University, I remember a master's student, Burt Reynolds, was coming in to talk to us, and he scoffed, and I heard him say, "What does Burt Reynolds have to teach me?" And I thought, wow, let's see. Burt Reynolds is top box office on the planet, and you, what's your name again? And so I'm guessing a few things.
Maybe just a few things. So you teach acting workshops both in your studio in Burbank and also in different cities all across the country. What do you do in your workshops?
Well, they vary. We do three specific workshops each year, two in the pilot season. We call them pilot season prep. In reality, they're an audition technique workshop. Basically, we examine everything from the point where the young actor crosses the threshold and enters the room. Body language, interview skills, hitting the mark, taking a breath, delivering your slate in a way that sends a message to casting and the producers that you're ready. And then backing it up with your performance and your preparation and getting ready for to deliver something that's going to be remembered. You want to leave an indelible mark in the room. You want to live beyond the time you exit that room. So anyway, we examine that, and then we'll do one in the fall called episodic prep. That's one of the workshops. Sometimes we'll do scene work for casting people. We'll bring them in. Sometimes we'll have representatives come in. We'll have an agent, a manager, or multiples of such, and bring them in to, you know, educate the kids on what they're looking for and how they find the marketplace. in Los Angeles, probably our, if I may segue to our summer event, we do a summer film camp, which I think is probably the best thing we do all year. It almost kills my staff to do it because it requires a lot of preparation. We have a lot of students flying in from various cities to be a part of it. Sometimes they fly in from out of the country. We have some people coming in from Australia this year we're excited about. And that is a 12-day film movie-making camp. So literally, it's not only the classes, it's not only the seminars, the information, but then it's the scenes, it's the rehearsals, it's the group table reads, the private coaching on your scenes, it's character development, and then we hire a professional crew, all people who work on various programs around Los Angeles. We want to give our students that experience. And these are real crew people. It's not like they're coddling our campers, if you will. You have to adapt to the professional environment, and that's part of it. We don't really make it any easier. We try in our preparation to get them ready for the moment, because on set, we don't want to create this false expectation that you're going to be coddled. You have to live up to the expectation that's placed upon you. And I know your experience with Disney. I have a lot of experience with Disney where we'll have an excellent writer who writes a particular joke, and because the young actor didn't invest the time into that joke, the joke dies and the network cuts the joke.
Yep.
It wasn't the fault of the writer. It was the fault of the actor. And even though we try to treat kids like kids on set, behind the scenes, I heard what that guy said about that kid.
That's right. Yeah.
And I can't say it in this podcast, but that was one angry writer, and rightfully so, because the kid was lazy in that moment and didn't invest into the joke.
Well, and people talk, unfortunately.
That's
or fortunately,
right.
You know, for whatever it's worth, they do talk. And then, you know, that stuff gets around, like if the kid can't really
deliver,
exactly.
And so we're not going to be writing those jokes for that kid in the future. And we're going to focus on the ones who honor. And then, as you know, these kids have to show up at 7:30 in the morning, go to school, and then they have to have their lines ready at 9 a.m. It's a lot of pressure. And usually these kids we work with are so professional, they're the ones who have their lines prepared, where the adults are floundering to get their lines.
It's true. So in the summer camp, you basically give your campers the experience of being in a full professional production.
One of our kids who's done really well, Kira Kosserin, is the lead of the Thundermans. On that particular show, we're blessed to have three of our homegrown kids on that one particular Nickelodeon show, Jack Griffo and Audrey Whitby, who was also the star of Bad Fairy, who John Beck produced. the John Beck from Liv and Maddie. At any rate, Kira credits these summer film camps I think she had one line on some other for Shake It Up or Austin and Ally, but that was it. That was her only other television experience. But because of this experience, she credits the camps. That being said, Kira Kosserin is one of the smartest people I've ever met. So this is like your own daughter. It's sort of one of those super children no one's going to get in their way of doing well.
Well, our first experience on a real set was when she was cast in a guest star role, and man, you know, it would have been great to have a summer camp behind her. She had 5 years of theater, which was fantastic training in my eyes, and a lot of people think that theater is a great training for film and TV.
But not necessarily specific to what was being requested.
No, and so, it was much more challenging than it needed to be, because if she'd just had some sort of experience before doing it, she would have had less anxiety. Mm-hmm. She would have literally understood the context that she was stepping into. Mm-hmm. It is something that I think that everybody should get an opportunity to do in some way or another before they're thrown into the water that's, at the deep end.
Before we go off that, on the road, we do workshops as well. And they vary. There's probably 15 or 20 standard courses that we'll take out on the road. And typically, to your point, we are working with kids who have a lot of musical theater background. And so, therefore, the job becomes getting their performances abbreviated for the camera. And I'm a stage actor way back when, and that's you know, it's interesting. The camera sees the world very differently. And an actor is typically myopic, seeing the world through their own point of view. They have to begin to understand how the camera sees the world, and then you adjust toward that lens. We spend a lot of time, especially with the teens, getting them behind the camera to understand how everything is affected by a single move of an actor. So not only are they learning by doing, but they're learning by filming, they're learning by editing, they're learning the global composition of what it takes to put film together or television together.
That is huge. So you get the kids behind the camera, too.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we'll begin that cycle for our on-camera class taught by my very gifted associate, Jafet Gordon. And I'll be joining that course next Saturday. And that's something that will be ongoing. We do have scene study that we mimic just like another class taught by Gloria Garayua, who's a wonderful actress, and Gloria leads our scene study course, which is really developed exactly like a course that you would go to in your 20s and 30s in town. And that's for our mid-teens, older teens, and early 20s students. And then at the end of that cycle, we'll have an industry person come in. I'll accompany them, and we will give our notes on the scene just so that they're understanding how the professionals are viewing their work, and give them some greater clarity.
So my brain's going in two different directions right now. One is I just want to circle back and underline this one thing that just showed up. One of the greatest issues for any young actor is finding representation. Uh-huh. And you know, just getting a meeting with a potential agent or manager is so challenging for so many of us. And, mm-hmm. and you know, one of the best ways for that to happen is for them to be in some sort of a showcase, you know, where agents and managers come to sort of see who might be out there, new talent. So that's something that happens in your workshops or some of your workshops?
Yeah, we can't guarantee it. It's really based upon the kid's performance. We'll try and we take extra care because unlike another workshop possibly where they don't know the kids or they don't know the teens, we typically know them. I've met them on the road or my staff has met them on the road in advance of them getting to Los Angeles. So we want to be, and we have a lot of industry people that are very friendly to our school, agents, managers, casting people. We want to be able to show to those buyers the strength of this particular young performer. So we are not a profit participant in their career, but we work in association with our industry friends to basically be a conduit to them. They're getting represented. We cannot fool a representative because they're very smart. They see it. They know it in a moment. But what we can do is maybe inform the work. Oftentimes my associates and I are writing the scenes, especially if the kid has a very particular talent in the showcase that you sat through. One of our boys happens to be a hip-hop dancer. He's also a singer. He's also an actor. So we wrote a scene that sort of allowed him to showcase what he does, and he does so wonderfully. And in other cases, it might be a girl who sings, or et cetera, et cetera. We want them to know how special the kid is, and then if they have room on their rosters, they'll call in for interviews, and often they'll get placed. So that's always a point of pride for us. I wish we could guarantee it, but it really is reliant upon the level of the child and where they are in their journey. I get a special satisfaction when maybe a child enters and they're green, and then a year later they come back and do another workshop, and the same people who were there a year before are going crazy for the kid because they see the development in a year, and that always makes us very happy, and those kids are represented, and then they're doing pretty well.
I love that. I also love that you take the time and have the ability to create material for the kids sometimes, because
you do
that's
it.
Extraordinary.
It's often done at 11 or 12 o'clock at night, or I'll get up at 5 in the morning just to do that before my daughter gets up for school. And my associate Jafet has two children, and he'll do the same thing. The one thing I love about my staff is I'm really blessed in that they care about this as much as I do. and they're all working actors, and they're all really talented, and we basically cover for each other when we're working, and we create this safe place where they have work to come back to, and they're very invested in their students, and they're very invested in getting them, you know, to the next level.
So then going in the other direction where my brain was about to go from our last conversation, we were talking about what the camera sees, and it's not what the actor sees. And a lot of people feel strongly that, you know, theater is great training for this sort of thing, except that guess what? The camera catches all kinds of stuff that you don't catch when you're in the audience watching somebody on stage. And so what would you say are some of the bigger differences between theater versus film and television, and what are some similarities in terms of acting and technique?
I find that theater is very similar to situation comedy, especially if you're playing before an audience, because you have to present in a way that the audience can see it. For sitcoms, you have four cameras. So in a way, that fourth wall is your audience. It's very wide. And I was working with Jason Earls. Jafet and I were asked to come over to that Disney show Kickin' It in the first week, and they had a young cast, and they asked us to come in and sort of get them ready. And Jason, who's really smart, sat in with us. He didn't need to. He was on Hannah Montana for many years. He's older. He's very skilled. But Jason has a way of presenting for sitcom that everything is toward the fourth wall, and then it's almost like a tennis backhand or forehand. He then hits the final syllable over to the person next to him, which is this energy that goes flying in that direction. But basically, every camera can pick up what Jason's doing in that format. It definitely changes as the genres change. And as you go to a delicate one-hour drama and film, I'm thinking of what my wonderful, amazing teacher, Charles Nelson Reilly, would teach us in class. Charles was a product of Uta Hagen's school in New York. And Charles would say, it's what's not being spoken that speaks the loudest. And it took me years to really understand the overall value of that. But as you get to film in a close-up, you're not presenting anything. It's what you're not saying. It's the secret you're holding on to. I have something that being forced to teach on the road, it puts me in a position where I have to make an actor better in 3 hours. How can I do that? And so I've challenged myself. My favorite American male actor is Robert De Niro. Mm. And the reason why I love Robert De Niro is because there's something alive in his performance 100% of the time. And often it's when he's not speaking. And as you can imagine Robert De Niro doing, he's usually asking, before he kills somebody in a movie, but he's normally asking, whether he's saying it out loud or not, he's asking, are you lying to me?
Wow.
Are you lying to me? And he's looking right through them. It's like he reaches into their throat, goes down their chest, yanks out their heart, and rips it out and is looking at it to make sure the person's not lying. I think that we as humans are constantly asking active interrogation questions. That's what I like to call this. And so I literally have students, I don't like talking in terms of things that are difficult to grasp. I want to give them tangible tools to leave with. But active interrogation informs every single line, because a young actor, and sometimes adults who come to us, They're merely going to the next line. You don't see the light on in their eyes whatsoever. If I'm a human being and at 5 o'clock I have a pain in my stomach, I go, what is that pain? Why do I have a pain in my stomach? Oh, wait a minute. Am I hungry? Question mark. When did I eat last? Question mark. What did I have for lunch today? What am I having dinner tonight? What am I having for dinner tonight? What did I have last night? It's a series of interrogations that go on constantly. Two ladies meet outside church. The first thing they're going to do is the computer chip in their brain is going to scan all the way up and down to find out if that's really a Prada purse. Is that really a Rolex watch? Is that Bentley leased or rented? Is this old money or new money? Guys will do the same thing. How much are you? There's so many things that we don't ask because we're being too polite. But as an actor, I love that stuff.
Yeah.
And I love when I'm picking up on people talking to me who are not saying something, and I like saying it out loud.
I like to see that flickering behind an actor's eyes. I like to feel as though I can see into their thoughts, even though they're not saying a word. That is one of my favorite, favorite things.
And a director and an editor will love you for that, because when we cut to you, you have so much going on. You're actually pushing the plot forward.
Silently.
Yeah.
But effectively and powerfully. And that's not the same as mugging for the camera, which takes us to my next question, because you have a lot of experience both acting on
and
coaching, you know, Disney. We're going to Disney now,
okay.
You know, and Disney has a very, we can say broad, we can say, you know, colorful, brightly colored. I think you said something like that earlier. Mm-hmm. I liked your color analogy, but it's got a kind of a heightened style to it, you know, and different genres have different styles. And a lot of kids who want to be actors on the Disney Channel. It's got its own style, but it's not the same as mugging. It's like, no, it still demands its own. It's got its own rules, right? Mm. How would you approach a performance for a Disney show?
Well, each character is different.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to be, you know, they're all drafted according to what the writers need. The writers are going to need a particular collection, a composition of characters to come together. So, for example, I played the President of the United States on a Disney show. Well, he wasn't the sharpest tack in the shed, this particular president. And he had delusions of grandeur. He enjoyed the sound of his own voice. And as I started to put the character breakdown together, I started to realize he's a do-gooder. He wants to do good. Well, in essence, he was kind of like the village idiot in the form of the President of the United States. So everybody had to come to his rescue. So in a way, there's this dial, and it goes from 1 to 10. And it just depends on how brightly you need to paint this performance. It's interesting. I live in Maddie. I know, because my daughter has it on constantly. You can get some really cartoonish guest star characters on that show. I mean, it's to the point it's gone beyond comedy. It's on cartoon. And then the writers are allowing for those moments when Liv is having a crisis of faith or something, and then all of a sudden it's going to have that dramatic moment. So what's the style? And even within that one particular program, where are we?
Mm-hmm.
So certain programs on Disney or Nick, the one thing I will say, and I have to laugh, it's because sometimes the casting directors will say, no, this Disney or Nick show is different. This is real. It's going to be really grounded. And we go through this thing, and they go through 3 months of casting. And when it gets on air, I'm sorry, I can't distinguish between that program and the next one in terms of brightness. So I think what ends up happening is people start to want to play it safe and fall into the same formula as they go along. But I think the biggest thing is, it's still the truth. It's all the truth. But to what degree is it dialed? Is it at 1 in a subtle tone? Or is it at 10? You know, is one of my favorite punctuations. I love to do classes just on punctuations, because often a young actor does not carry the sound of their line to the punctuation. They start to drift off and they lose effectiveness. You don't want a producer in the back of the room going, what did he say? What did she say? As soon as they go into that mode, you're not getting that job. So just like a female gymnast at the Olympic launches off of her apparatus, she has to stick the landing.
Yep.
If she falls forward or backward, there's points off. I feel the same way about punctuations. So we do a fun game where the kid has to say, period, after the line. I'm having a really nice coffee with Bonnie, period. If I turn that into a question, I'm having a really nice coffee with Bonnie, ? And I have them say, ? Because I want them to carry the feeling through the punctuation.
Yeah.
Or, I'm having a really nice coffee with Bonnie, ! And I'll have them be enthusiastic through the punctuation. And then there's my favorite punctuation, which is the interrobang, which is half interrogative, half bang. It's an old printing term, because when the old printing machines would make the ! It would send this huge bang. bang through the room, and so they created a term called interrobang. But the interrobang is incredulous. When I first started acting, they would never use that. In parentheses prior to the line, they would say incredulous. Right. You cannot wrap your mind around it. So on a Disney show, it may sound like, wait a minute, you turn dad into a toad? And you're going to have that heightened dial up to number 10 reaction. So it just kind of depends where you're at and what character you're in. And we often need that grounded character. On major network, I really enjoy playing the point of view of the audience. I like when everybody, got to do this on Third Rock from the Sun, when everybody around me is a satellite insane being, and I have to be the grounded person so that the audience sees all this through that person's eyes.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody for them to relate to.
Exactly.
You were talking about how even just like lack of punctuation or not being in touch with the lines can lose a producer in a room. Mm-hmm. That takes us to the whole conversation about auditioning. So auditioning is really its own skill set, and it's a critical one if an actor is going to actually succeed in the business. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for your young actors who are approaching an audition?
All right. Well, first of all, I think the universe of an audition is vastly different than the universe of having the job and being on set, in the sense that, you know, you're going to have your TV family, you're in your TV kitchen. All of the individuals, the characters are there for you. It's so easy. All you got to do is pick up the piece of bread, take a bite, and say the line. It's so easy. For the audition, you have to manifest the entire universe.
In your mind.
Yeah. And so we do a lot of work with, first of all, projecting the eye lines to camera. And then there's a delicate science for that, because primarily you want 80-85% of the lines going to the casting director or the reader. You want to make as much eye contact with that person. You want to feel like they're very much a part of it. But if you have another character or two in the scene, you may have to honor them with the periodic glance, number one. Most actors, it just depends. You don't bring props into an audition. That's the general rule. There have been a few people like myself who can break that rule, but you better be a pro to try and do it, because you'll get in trouble. And then it's a very delicate thing. But assuming that you cannot bring a prop into the room, you can still create an activity that the character is coming in with. So every great acting class talks about the moment before. There can be, I like to talk in terms of a dynamic entry. There has to be something that, how am I going to make this audition indelible where they have to see me again? And so I want to bring something into the room, and I want to bring an energy. Where have I been and where am I going? And what is my expectation upon entering this room? And then, wait a minute, now you're telling me this new information, which creates this conflict. And how many people am I talking to? That's why working the camera is so critical. You have to really be able to manifest. In fact, I teach a technique called the magic rectangle. When I started teaching teens and kids, I started to realize, hey, I couldn't find a book on film technique. And so I wanted to make this tangible. And so it's a basic math. And as a matter of fact, my adult actors around the country appreciate it even more. I think it's because it simplifies for them the math. But essentially, the math sends you in a direction of teaching you how to be intimate to the lens, especially with those subtle dramas. But getting back to the audition, you have to bring the universe of the environment. Environment is huge. A great actor, in my mind, can change the temperature in a room by 10 degrees if they truly believe it. Mm-hmm. If they're completely committed to their environment and what is happening around them. And if they're hungry, if a great scene, every great scene has a ticking clock. So what is the urgency that you're lending to that? Because the audition is a one-dimensional experience for the viewer. And so you have to bring those other dimensions to it. And the actors that can do that typically have an advantage and will get to call back. Does that answer your question?
Pretty much, yeah. No, that's really nice. I've just seen enough kids auditioning where it's like the world doesn't begin until the beginning of the you know, the the sides. It's like, wait a minute, this is not occurring in a vacuum. You know,
exactly.
It is critical that they show up with a background.
And television writers are notorious for writing, the scene begins in the middle of the scene. We're going to skip all the politeness. Oh, bye, so nice to see you again. How are you? How are the kids? What's going on in your life? They're going to skip all of that and get to, where's my money?
Yeah. So right. you need to have constructed some understanding of where that came from.
And I think the better you understand what the writer's intention is, then the better you're going to be able to deliver that performance.
Which is where doing a little research on the writer can be useful.
Right, and also understanding writing. So for our teen students, you know, there's a certain point where I don't want to be responsible for sending out a legion of actors waiting for the phone to ring. So if they're really bright, we're going to start to get them writing, maybe get them behind the camera, get them thinking in terms of being a producer. My ultimate goal is to start to get some network executives and studio executives out there, because we get such bright people that are attracted to this profession, and I don't want them to be victims waiting for the phone to ring.
That's huge. And actually, I love that you brought that up, because so many people in this town and in this industry began because they were in love with acting, but they found that they ultimately were happier and more fulfilled doing something just adjacent to that, like casting or directing or writing or producing. So I think that young actors should always have that in the back of their mind.
A vibrant young talent should be, if they don't write, and writing is not for everybody, then they should be finding young writers and cultivating work. And they should be, constantly studying, what is the next medium? Can I go make a 6-minute movie and get that out? How can I afford that? Create that network, put those people together. And or write, just try writing, learn from the masters. You know, a great artist, especially during Renaissance time and Impressionist period, would be handed a blank canvas, and then they'd say, okay, now copy the Mona Lisa or copy a great classic. And in the journey of understanding how the master put that together, they became a great artist themselves.
Well, sort of like teaching is maybe the best way to truly learn something deeply.
Exactly.
Having to come at it from that other side. And speaking of, new medium and that sort of thing, I want to know what your take on Skype is. A lot of people feel weird about coaching over Skype, but some people just love it. Where do you stand on working via Skype?
Well, I Skype often. Obviously, I prefer to have them in person if it's possible. The only time I find it a real hindrance is when we have to work on a lot of physical comedy, because then it requires me standing up, allowing them to see something that I'm offering them, and then me watching how they'll interpret it and what they want to do to change it. Those are the only times I find it a problem, because actually I'm in close up and they're in close up, and it's a very intimate sort of experience where I can get into their minds and see what, are they informing their characters with active questions to keep alive in the scene. I don't have a problem with it, and I think it's a great tool and allows an actor in Texas or Atlanta or in the Midwest to tap into a great teacher in New York, Los Angeles, whether it's a vocal coach or anything. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, personally, I love the democracy of it, that you don't have to be location dependent to work with somebody wonderful. And I also kind of love, it is very much like acting for the camera, because guess what? That's basically what you're doing.
Exactly.
To be on Skype, you're seeing more or less what the camera sees.
Good point.
So then, segueing on to parents, you've inevitably dealt with a lot of parents through your work, because you coach a lot of young actors.
Mm-hmm.
I talk to parents all the time. That's becoming what I do. Do you have any advice for parents who are trying to help their young actors succeed in this business?
Let me just first say that my parents could have never afforded to offer me the journey that I was craving as a child. Plus, I was growing up in Florida. I had an Italian immigrant father. The idea of me doing a play, the first thing he thought was, well, that's the opposite of work.
It's play.
Right? Except a play requires 60 hours of work to get it done. So it took a while for me to educate my father as to what I was doing. I think that there's a lot of well-meaning parents that you know, sometimes the kid is a force of nature, your daughter in case in point, and others, that they're kind of leading this. They want it. They know what they want. That being said, it's expensive. It's not any more expensive than professional baseball, being on, you know, on the circuit, the traveling teams that lead up to that, or figure skating or anything else. So in order to turn your kid into a professional these days, unfortunately, it requires a lot of money. I'm not a big proponent of having families separated from one another, but it happens. And sometimes you have to hope that it's a strong marriage, number one, and that everybody's on the same team with the same purpose. I think that we have to be very careful to be the captain of the ship. I think the parents need to be the CEO and not let an agent, a manager, an acting coach, anyone take over their parenting, nor the child. They have to remain the parent, and they have to be firm with that and understand what's best for the child. I don't believe acting is for every kid. And I'll tell the parents, when your kid decides that they don't want to be an actor anymore, I'll throw the party, because I'm a professional actor and I understand what it takes to go on that journey. And it takes everything you have to make it. So I only want this journey for the kids that truly are meant for the journey. And I think that everyone has to be holistic in the village wrapped around the child. In our school, and any person that I do business with, the dollar can never come before the child. It always has to be about that. I'm a dad. I'm very protective of my daughter. And I want the same for every child. Mm-hmm. I want you to meet my daughter and tell me if my daughter's an actress. And the girl was supposed to come over the following day. She was an older teen. Well, I thought about it overnight, and then I decided to call him before the girl came over. And I said, I have to ask you a question. How am I serving your daughter if I tell you she's not professional actor material? If the journey that she is on is demanding that she goes through this to better learn who she is as a human being, how do I serve her? And that's how I feel about this. My daughter, I don't think she's going to be an actress. Trust me, I don't need her to be an actress. But she'll be in our early classes, especially because at some point, she's going to have to walk into a room, look people in the eye, shake a hand, and sell herself or sell some product, move her company forward, and she needs to have a particular confidence. I've been in over 2,000 rooms probably interviewing. Most of us have, if you reach a certain age. And I can walk into a room and I can tell you the temperature of that room. I can tell you who likes each other in that room. And I love walking into a room with perfect strangers. I'm at my best. It's almost like a fresh canvas every time. One time I was working on Disney, knock at my door, and there's a Disney exec saying, "Hey, John, are you busy for the next hour?" And I'm like, "No, I'm actually waiting for later. I go on later." I said, "Why?" And they said, "Well, we're early. We have 150 people from around the world who are our franchise people, and they're here, and we have nothing to show them." And so they said, "How long would it take you to get ready?" And I said, "Well, I'm ready now."
Yeah, I'm ready right now.
I've been ready. I've been waiting for that knock at the door.
I've been ready for years.
Let's go. Let's go. And the biggest thing is, I know now not to make it about John.
Yeah.
I don't make it about me. I make it about them.
Yeah.
I celebrate them. And that's the skill set that I've learned, first of all, with my brilliant teachers and all the experiences that I've had, for better or for worse. But I can say a little bit about me, but as soon as I make it about them and put the light on them and get them talking, first of all, I'm interested. I'm learning from that experience. And so those are my favorite moments in the world. You can't be afraid of those moments. It's the ego that wants to put it back on us and force us to be, I don't know, just it makes you feel alone. Once you open this up to the community of what we do, it's very beautiful.
I agree completely, and I'm so happy that this conversation went in that direction, because I've always felt with all my heart that acting training is good for everybody. And it's not just about like whether you want to make a profession of being an actor or not. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think isn't it true that the number one fear people have is public speaking, and you know, mm-hmm. that's even they're more frightened of that than death in many cases.
Exactly.
And how sad is that? Because it keeps you from having an extraordinary life and being able to talk to people who might change your life or whose lives you might change just by your interaction.
I think early on we need to change the focus of that so that public speaking, whether it's to 3 people, 5 people, or 100 people, should be perceived as an act of service.
Yes.
To them. And whenever I'm in a place of service, I'm so much better. First of all, my ego's in the car.
Yep.
And I'm there to literally serve the group of people that are in front of me. How can I best serve them? And then, honestly, any nerves you might have tend to go away. And it's a great opportunity to really create a communion with those individuals.
Well, yeah, because then it's about contribution. You know, what can I contribute? What can I give? Mm-hmm. And what a beautiful, beautiful skill set to give anybody, regardless of where they end up in their lives. You know, and let's be honest, we're not all going to be professional actors. But, you know, I feel similarly comfortable walking into a room. I feel like I can talk in front of anybody. And I did theater in high school, and it was like, you know, one of the best things I ever did. I'm not a professional actor. But it gives me a sense of confidence, and it gives me an ability to feel articulate. And I would want that for anybody. So yeah. I say that to anybody who asks me, you know, yeah, I think it's valuable. Let your kid, if they're interested, take acting classes, give them opportunities to the extent that you can. Who knows what'll come of it? But whatever comes of it, it'll probably be, you know, a good thing.
I've been asked to give classes or teach classes for introverts, and I really want to study that more because I think that there's such a great need. One time I was teaching at a university in the South, and I got surrounded by the faculty the night before at a cocktail party, and they were kind of circling in on me. And eventually the question came up, hey, John, what are you teaching our students tomorrow? And I also recognized that I was being interviewed at that moment. And so I thought I'd play back a little bit of them. So I said, well, I don't have any idea. And they all looked at me and kind of wide-eyed. And I said, because I haven't met the students yet, so I don't know what they need.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, I have a friend of mine who's a shaman, lives in Boulder, Colorado. He was asked to speak in front of 300 doctors, and he told me the same story. And he was asked by all these people in advance, so what will you be discussing today? And he said, I have no idea. I haven't met them yet.
Yeah.
And then you just have to understand what's the need.
Yeah. And then show up for that.
Exactly.
So now, what about the kids themselves? I get asked daily what some kid can do to break into the business. You know, what would your advice be for some maybe 12-year-old kid who lives far away from LA or New York? You know, they live somewhere away from the major centers. What do you think some of the best ways for those kids to move forward toward that dream might be right where they are?
Well, you know, I'm just thinking of the way that I had to learn it. There was no money to educate me. So I had to study the greats. Peyton Manning just won the Super Bowl. I can remember when he was in college, ESPN would go and show how he studied tape. Nobody studied tape like this guy. And then I'm mindful of Mike Tyson. His manager, Gus, I don't know if it was D'Amato or whatever, I can't remember his last name. He recognized that he had this beast of an athlete in front of him, but he forced him to become an expert on boxing. And he had him watch the greats from going back to Jackie Lewis. I've had the pleasure of meeting Steven Spielberg, you know, and people like him and Scorsese. These are experts, J.J. Abrams. They study film. I'm in Dallas. I'll be teaching a class to try and educate people how to study film, how to study television, how to understand the genres. Zendaya, who's on Disney, I was talking to her father early on when she was just on Shake It Up and I was on the show, and he told me how she studied the work of Raven Simone. Well, I've had the pleasure of working with Raven. Raven is a modern Lucille Ball. Just amazing what she can do audibly, physically, how she captivates an audience constantly. So in the same way as the great artists were studying the masters, Zendaya was studying Raven. I was studying the great masters of my time. That's where I learned the comedy from, and comedy, comedic delivery, and the other. And then I was, you know, lucky enough to get people like Burt Reynolds, who created a space for young actors in Florida, and Charles Nelson Reilly comes down to be the master teacher. And then we had people like Dolly Parton, Liza Minnelli, Sly Stallone, and then Julie Harris from Broadway, Vincent Gardenia, five-time Tony Award winners coming in. And we as kids were interacting with them, working with them on stage with them, sweeping the stage afterwards, in classes with them. And just through the ability to be a young person and experiencing, Vincent Gardenia, this wonderful actor, taught me how to cook pasta. He said to me, we were at Burt's Beach House in Florida, and he says, so you want to be an actor? I said, yes. He goes, okay, then you have to learn how to cook pasta.
That's hilarious.
And I'm like, okay. It's like so a scene out of The Godfather.
Oh, my God. Well, I love that because it's true. Not every kid, and let's be honest, most kids don't have parents who can pick up and move them to L.A. or New York, and many kids don't have parents who can even afford acting classes. And, you know, there's usually some kind of class available where you are, but not necessarily. And you really can learn a lot in your room, watching YouTube, watching great films, watching, you know, incredible performances through television. So anyway, thank you so much. Any final thoughts for young actors or parents of young actors hoping to make a career in film or TV?
So if you're a young actor and there's no money in your family and you're someplace in America and you feel like you can do this, do it. That's why Nike makes so much money. Just do it. That was my circumstance. Just put one foot in front of the other. I had this dream of getting inside that television box. It was a box back then. And they were having so much fun. It just felt so alive in there. And I just kept on my course. Then you have to become the best actor in your category, period, so that you erase the no's that are in front of you, and until finally someone says yes. You can't give up. You must believe. And you must, you know, there was a great football coach one time who said, it's okay if you out-talent me, but shame on me if you out-work me. And I'm certainly not the best actor in Hollywood, but I have outworked a number of them to get my jobs. And I've been gifted with some great teachers and some, I have a wonderful family. And so the support has been there. You just have to be willing to outwork everybody, and you'll be fine.
I love that, and that's something anybody can do. As we wrap up, can you share with us any upcoming projects or where you're going to be teaching, and most of all, how people can find you?
The website is johndiaquino.net. It's not just me. It's my wonderful staff, and we collectively help facilitate training for young professionals. Really, our target kid is not, or teen, or young adult is not a hobbyist. They want this as a profession. And they're going to receive the type of training that's going to get them ready. And we're not easy. We're nice people, but we're not easy. On the road, I teach in Dallas at Standing Ovation Studios. In Atlanta, I teach at Catapult. I'll be going to San Francisco. Everything will be on the website. And people should just register on the website. Then they'll be on our mailing list if they're interested. And I'll be in, other places as well. San Francisco, going to Nashville at some point in the near future, back to Florida, and upcoming New York this year. I'm looking forward to that.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, John. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Bonnie. Thanks for doing great work.
Thanks for listening to Hometown to Hollywood. If you like what you heard here, subscribe to this free podcast and leave a quick rating and review. A moment to click on a star rating really helps, and a minute to write a sentence-long review makes a real difference in the ranking for this podcast. Thank you so much for helping me. Do you want to know more about getting a young actor up and running in Hollywood? Buy my book, The Hollywood Parents Guide, on Amazon. And if you need specific help getting your career or your child's career up and running or to the next level, you can get a one-on-one consultation with me over Skype or in person in Los Angeles. Go to my website, hollywoodparentsguide.com, and click on the consultations page. Thanks, and see you next week.